Alternative.
Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Memorial Day Tuesday edition. Feels a hell of a lot like Monday, though. How you doing, Fancy Brian?
It feels like a Monday.
It certainly does. Got Evan here with me in the world headquarters. Beautiful Madison, Wisconsin. Weather pretty nice. He'll be lightly screening your calls all day. And I hope there's a lot of them at 844-967-2789. I made a pledge to certain members of this audience, Fancy Brian, and the pledge I made, conservatives primarily, cover the Sussman trial. Cover the Sussman, right? They asked us, cover the Sussman. Who's Sussman, you might ask? Well, he's this guy who apparently worked for, what, the Clinton team back in 2016. And he apparently approached, you know, the FBI, and there was some conversation. And anyways, he might have pointed them towards this sort of back channel connection between Trump, or at least Trump Tower and Alpha Bank. And the question was, did he properly represent himself as an employee of the, the Clinton team? Did he tell them? Well, I'm part of the Clinton team. Well, apparently, a jury felt like, yes, adequately he did inform the FBI, and it was James Baker and a few others, but he did. And how do we know this as of today? Well, because he was acquitted in a court of law. And this is going to sting a little bit. It's going to sting all those, let's just call them, conspiracy theorists, Russia hoaxers, MAGA hat wearers, Trumpsters. They got to be a little sad today, Fancy. You know, sort of a disappointing outcome. So I thought that's where we would lead today. Clinton campaign lawyer Michael Sussman found not guilty of lying to the FBI in a blow to the Durham investigation. Now, Durham is the special prosecutor still left over from the Trump administration. And this was going to be the big one. You know, he's finally going to take the Clinton campaign to the woodshed. Well, let's see how it worked out. Hillary Clinton campaign lawyer Michael Sussman was acquitted Tuesday of lying to the FBI in the first trial of special counsel John Durham's investigation. Will there be more? Will there be more? The verdict is a major defeat for Durham and his Justice Department prosecutors, who have spent 3 years looking for wrongdoing in the Trump-Russia probe. He claims Sussman lied during a 2016 meeting in which he passed a tip to the FBI about Donald Trump and Russia. The Washington, D.C. federal jury deliberated for 6 hours over 2 days before reaching its verdict. And the Sussman case revolved around his September 2016 meeting with James Baker, a friend who was the FBI's general counsel. Sussman passed along a tip that led to a four-month FBI inquiry into possible internet back channel between the Trump org and the Kremlin-linked Alpha Bank. Both companies denied the claim the FBI didn't find any improper cyber links. So that's the end of it, right? No. Here we are. They're investigating the investigators. They're getting to the bottom of it. And the Durham-led prosecutors argued that Sussman intentionally lied to Baker by saying he came only as a concerned citizen and not on behalf of any client, saying Sussman hit his ties to Democrats to manipulate the FBI and shit up an October surprise to help Clinton win. Now, in Sussman's telling, at the peak of Russia's attack during the 2016 election, he went to the FBI with a good faith tip, which originated from reputable cyber experts that he represented. He separately worked on Clinton's behalf to peddle that unverified tip to the press, generating some coverage. He didn't try to dupe Baker or hide his political ties, which were well known to the FBI. And Durham is a Trump-era holdover, is that what we're calling him, who was appointed by then-Attorney General Bill Barr in 19 to review the Russia probe. Barr and Durham have publicly questioned the legitimacy of the Russian probe, but Durham hasn't yet backed up those assertions with criminal convictions. And now you're 0-1 in the courts. You know, you'll catch Trump in no time. Because he was, what, like 1-60? One juror told CNN the jury didn't initially agree on the verdict, but then they got the case on Friday afternoon. But over the course of deliberations, the juror said all 12 jurors agreed that Durham's team did not meet the 5 legal requirements needed to find Sussman guilty. So, didn't meet the legal standard for a conviction. You know, and that's got to sting a little bit, I got to think. Especially if you're the former president, Donald Trump. And Donald Trump lost his, let's call it crap, in exactly 3-2-1. So here's what Donald Trump had to say about the acquittal of Sussman. Our country's going to hell! A little bit more from a statement posted not on Twitter. Still doesn't have a Twitter account. Former President Trump on Tuesday expressed outrage. Outrage, I tell you, Fancy Brian, at the news that Michael Sussman, a lawyer who represented Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign and the Democratic Party, was found not guilty of lying to the FBI. Now, Sussman is being investigated by a special counsel in relation to the origins of the Bureau's probe of Trump's 2016 campaign for president. Now, here's the statement from the former. Our legal system is corrupt. All caps, corrupt. That's why, you know, he's serious. Our judges and justices are highly partisan. You appointed a lot of them. A little bit more here.
Yeah.
They're highly partisan, compromised, or just plain scared. Our borders are open. All caps again. Our elections are rigged. Inflation is rampant. All caps. Gas prices and food costs are through the roof. Our military leadership is woke. How dare they be woke? Our country is going to hell. H-E, double hockey sticks, all caps. And Michael Sussman is not guilty. Trump and his allies have long claimed Sussman and others within the federal law enforcement and intelligence communities were part of a politically motivated deep state, you know, attempt to undermine his first presidential. Now, conservative media outlets have relentlessly covered the special counsel's probe and Sussman's role in the narrative. And before his acquittal this week, prosecutors had alleged that Sussman, a key figure in the special counsel's investigation, had lied to the FBI regarding the case. Now, here's a statement from the special counselor appointed by Bill Barr under Trump. While we are disappointed in the outcome, we respect the jury's decision and thank them for their service. I also want to recognize and thank the investigators and prosecution team for their dedicated efforts in seeking truth and justice in this case. Do you think he thinks justice was served?
It's funny.
You know, one thing they did not include in the posting to the Truth Social, I'm going to try to go to the original source here, see if I can find it. Trump concluded, the country is going to hell. Enjoy your day.
Really?
Enjoy your day, yes.
We're all going to hell. Enjoy your day.
From the Hill's reporting thereof. You know, the country's going to hell. Enjoy your day.
Enjoy your day. Perfect sense. Just like all the things he randomly lumped together, and then also the Sussman verdict was awful.
You know, I should give full context to the statement, Fancy Brian. Here is the last two sentences of the Truth Social posting at Donald J. Trump. He got the red check, so you know he's verified. He's at Real Donald Trump. Didn't give himself the middle initial. We talked about the legal system corrupt. Our judges and justices, highly partisan, compromised or just plain scared. Borders open, check. Elections rigged, check. Inflation rampant. Gas prices, food costs through the roof. Military leadership is woke, check. Our country is going to hell, and Michael Sussman is not guilty. How's everything else doing? Enjoy your day. See, I've given it full context now.
Really good stuff. This is a normal day. Everything's horrible. Everything's crappy. See you later. See you tomorrow. All right, cool.
I was just reading a few of the other quotes from legal experts. Apparently, they're enjoying this outcome, Vance Brian. I'm not claiming to be any sort of legal expert, but, you know, in deference to the fact that I promise certain conservative members of this audience full and comprehensive coverage of the Sussman outcome.
I wonder if he'll call and concede.
Oh, you mean CJ or Trump?
Exactly.
So Sussman, not guilty. Not guilty. And we do have some other legal updates. We're going to bring them to you. And, you know, later in the week, coming up soon, James Santel, our good buddy. Santel is going to join us because, you know, when we stack up enough legal updates, we're going to need the former U.S. attorney to join the team and tell us what we should believe. And I never did believe that Sussman was going to be convicted. You know, slightly embarrassing for the Hillary Clinton campaign 6 years after the fact. More embarrassing is, you know, the fact that Trump is no longer the president. We moved beyond that election campaign. And he's still out there crying about Sussman and also rigged elections, right? Rigged elections. And for the big Jim Santel fans amongst us, and isn't that all of us, really, everybody is. Did I tell you fine folks at James Santel launching a brand new show right here on the network? The Jim Santel Show. I don't know what we're calling it yet. Something about Leave the Cannolis. But Saturday mornings, 9 to 11, former U.S. Attorney James Santel will host his own show each and every Saturday. I'm coming down to the Shaw. I'm very excited. Friday Night Live, that's also starting this week. The Farmer's Market and the brand new James Santel Show. So it's a big day. I'm enjoying it, just like Trump said.
You get nothing. You lose.
Well, it also could be somebody sitting on their bed that weighs 400 pounds, okay?
You got nothing.
The courts agree with us, too. What's going on in this country?
Wrong!
But other than that, I wish everybody a very Merry Christmas.
Grass-fed, locally raised, 100% organic. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a Tuesday that feels a hell of a lot like a Monday. Vance Brian, do you have a nice extended holiday weekend?
I had a pair of toddlers that came by to terrorize, as well as sleep over with 8 10-year-old girls. So I spent yesterday staring at a wall.
Eight 10-year-old girls,
man. It was
that
awesome.
That sounds like a house full of trouble, Fancy Brand.
It seemed like it, but actually worked out really well. It ran way smoother than I thought it was, and it's mostly because we kept everybody busy.
And you did a little bit of work stuff for us on Monday. We appreciate you coming in over the course of the weekend. Making us better, I hope.
Oh, yeah. Well, lots of ideas. I downloaded literally 45 minutes straight of information in that conversation. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that off air.
We will. Well, I'll tell you what, Fancy Brand, I had one or two highlights from the big holiday weekend. Number one, I saw the movie Maverick. Pretty good stuff.
I've heard great things about that from people who hate it.
I saw it on opening night. And, you know, it only tries just slightly a little too hard. Just very slightly. A whole lot of Americana all piled on top of each other. You know, all these flyboy aviators there, and girls, because there are some female pilots, you know, in the new breed of Maverick. And, you know, something of a star piece for Tom Cruise. But, you know, all things considered, it was a damn good movie. Good viewing, good watching. So that was the Friday night excitement. And then the rest of the weekend pretty much sucked. I got to tell you, did I mention I was painting the house this weekend?
But I thought you liked painting.
In smaller doses than, you know, a 1,600 foot ranch house with exposure. So not only did I paint, I, you know, scraped a little paint and did a bunch of sanding. And then I did caulking, which I didn't even know was a necessary thing.
Oh, it is. And it's the worst part of everything.
Oh, but I did a bunch of caulking, caulked my ass off. And then I power washed it all down, you know, and that was a full day's work on Saturday. I was feeling good. It's all prepped. And I got up Sunday morning, you know, bright and early, and I'm going out there with my paintbrush and just hammering that paint on there, just slapping her on. And, you know, it wouldn't have been my first choice color. It's not exactly pink, but it's got sort of a violet hue to it. You know, it's you can imagine the missus picked out the color.
Is it pushing on the lavender side?
Sort of a steely violet, let's say. Steely violet. That's what we're going with.
It ain't bad.
But on the back porch, she started painting some purple that would have embarrassed a Minnesota Viking. You know, it was way too much. And so that's already been toned down. The back porch was not going to be like a Viking pad. No offense to our friends at AM 950 KTNF, but your team sucks, man. Packers are bust. So anyways, got three sides of this ranch house painted on Sunday. And I saved the best for last. That last exposed side with the high ladder work and the high awnings. And I had to get up.
Oh, you waited for the hottest day? That's good.
The hottest, the gustiest.
Most humid.
And as fate would have it, you know, apparently the sunniest side of the house. Now, mostly I wasn't in direct sunlight, but it still felt like 90 degrees and fairly humid. I mean, I got to tell you, man, I was cramping last night all over my body, like just one giant cramp, like Charlie horses in my every part of me was just my hands for like 2 days. They've alternated between like very sore and numb, you know, like I've got no feeling in them. And then they wake up and be like slamming your hand in the car door and you can't feel it for a second. Then you feel it. And it's like, oh. So, you know, other than the fact that I'm basically a wimp and, you know, I really haven't worked very hard in my life, you know, in short bursts. Like when I was in the Army, worked a little construction once upon a time. And then like years and years of developed laziness. You know, you're in radio with me, Fancy Brian. This ain't exactly ditch digging here. But then, you know, like 1 week in a year, I'll just throw myself into a project. And, dude, I beat the snot out of myself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It feels good, but also doesn't.
Well, no, there's very little good about it. Because I came down the ladder, my final corner painted. And I don't know if I've ever noticed or mentioned this, at least you, Fancy Brian, because you don't really see me in painting mode. But I paint sort of, let's just say, irritably, angry, like big projects, physical projects. You know, I'm not like good-natured about it. I'm like, you know, irritated the whole weekend. So I'm up there just, man, it's all in a layer. I paint this job. You know, I'm out there cooking in the sun. And I hopped off that ladder. I was so proud of myself. I painted every corner of the house. And my wife's out there doing the trim in the garage door. You know, so I shouldn't say everything. My wife was out there painting probably nearly as much as I was. But she's doing the fine detail stuff. And I'm slacking up. You know, to my perception, I'm putting most of the pink paint on. And so, anyways, I hop down the ladder, and she looks at me, and she goes, "You don't think you're done yet, do you?" I said, What are you talking about? She's like, "Well, the blue stuff." I'm like, "There's no blue on there. Blue's the former color." I'm like, "There's no blue on that house." She said, no, she meant the trim. Like, get back there on the ladder and start painting the trim. And I'm thinking, I never contracted for trim, lady. You know, I said I'd paint that house, but, you know, how did it never cross my thought that, you know, you're going to touch the trim a couple times. And the trim next to the shiny new paint is going to look 100 years old. So you also got to go back up the ladder, you know, sort of dizzy and dehydrated and angry and go do some more painting. And now I'm just a bitter, bitter soul. And my hands, I can feel my hands now. But the rest of me, ooh, kinked, sore. So I'm faking it today. We're going to fake it till we make it. Your calls could help me through. 844-96-PARTY.
What's your prediction?
Prediction?
Yes, prediction.
Pain.
Life is pain, Highness. Anyone who says differently is selling something.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Memorial Day Tuesday edition. Yeah, I'm dragging the whole holiday weekend out. You know, I got a big birthday month ahead. Tomorrow is June. And then the Crudy birthday, the Salvia birthday, and technically Donald Trump's birthday all coming up down the pike. You know, we always make kind of a big deal self-indulgently of our own birthdays. So anticipate doing the same again this year, fancy Brian. Looking forward to it. Bunch of Geminis that we are.
Yeah, by the time my birthday rolls around in August, I am exhausted. And people are like, you want to go out and celebrate? I'm like, I'm still out. Okay, I'll celebrate.
Fortunate for me and for all the partiers, you know, my birthday falls early in the summer. We're going to have a good time. Always have a good time when you join the political party at 844-967-2789. Fancy, we've got some sound of the president. We might go there next. But I have an encouraging legal update for the audience. And you should be encouraged by this. And you might wonder why. I'll tell you why. Peter Navarro. You remember Peter Navarro? I think I saw him on MSNBC with Ari Melber. And Ari Melber at that time said, sir, what you're describing, I think he called it the Green Bay sweep. Sir, what you're describing is a coup. And he didn't do himself any favors, Peter Navarro. Now, Navarro also wrote a book, and Navarro was also resisting giving testimony to the J6 committee. But Peter Navarro says FBI agents have served him with a subpoena on the January 6th events, reporting at thehill.com. Former Trump advisor Peter Navarro says in a draft lawsuit that FBI agents served him a subpoena last week, asking him to testify before a grand jury on Thursday. Thursday, that's coming up a couple days from now, over the January 6th Capitol riot. Here is what Navarro wrote. On May 26, 2022, two FBI special agents banged loudly on my door in the early morning hours to present me with the fruit of the poisonous tree grand jury subpoena, commanding me to comply with the original, illegal, and unenforceable subpoena issued to me by the committee dated February 9, 2022, according to the lawsuit Navarro posted online. Now, Navarro has thus far refused to comply with the subpoena issued by the House Select Committee, you know, the J6 Committee, despite a vote in the House last month to hold him in contempt of Congress. And Navarro said the latest subpoena was signed by the U.S. Attorney for Washington, D.C., Matthew Graves, seeking all documents requested by the J6 Committee, as well as any communications with Trump or his lawyers and representatives. His lawsuit opposing the subpoena, which Politico reports he plans to file on Tuesday, that'd be today, lists Graves, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and members of the J6 Committee as defendants. The New York Times, also reporting on the draft lawsuit Monday night, noted that Navarro's plan to represent himself in the case. Well, they say the lawyer who represents himself has a fool for a client.
You fool!
Well, apparently, much like myself, you know, painting the house instead of hiring a professional, Navarro wants to save some scratch. He's trying to save some dough here, Fancy Brian. asked if he would testify, he told the New York Times, TBD, to be determined. Navarro has asserted executive privilege and ignored the initial subpoena from the House committee. He argues in the draft lawsuit that the U.S. attorney's subpoena is a derivative of the fruit of the poison tree, referring to the House subpoena. And in legal terms, I had a lawyer, you know, I was defendant in that case. A lawyer told me, you know, that search was an illegal search. So anything turned up in the search, you know, that might be in my possession would be fruit of the poisonous tree. If you are searched or the underlying predicate is not reasonable or doesn't meet legal standard, then the fruit of the tree is poisoned. Or so that's what this man would speculate. And we'll have to see. But I took great, great sort of glee in this news because it is a evolution of the story. And what do I mean by that? The Department of Justice is suddenly involved. The Department of Justice is now issuing the subpoenas. That means there is a grand jury in place brought by the Department of Justice. That's the federal DOJ. You get what I'm going here? So we've wondered, when is Merrick Garland Day coming? It's getting closer. Because when you talk about Peter Navarro, I think he was a cabinet-level secretary to the former president of the United States. I mean, now you're starting to get a little close to the head of the organization, if you know what I'm saying, Fancy Brian. I mean, we've moved beyond insurrectionist pawns and maybe even seditionist co-conspirators. We've moved up to the organization phase, the planners, the creators of the coup, if you will, including Peter Navarro. And I wouldn't be shocked to hear John Eastman was also served. Hell, maybe Rudy and Cleta Mitchell and Sidney Powell. Oh, there's lots of lawyers, including that passel. So anyways, I thought I'd, you know, give you a little encouraging news. The wheels of justice, they move slowly, but they're freaking moving. Fancy Brian, a little bit more. This time, I want to go to the sound of President Joe Biden. And, you know, I like to not have a big shoot 'em up kind of a program. We've been talking about guns and dead kids for a number of days. Felt good to take a little time off from that. Got to be honest with you fine folks. The president, he was in Texas on Sunday, met with the families, the victims' families, Uvalde, Texas. And the NRA, they had their little soiree down in Texas on Friday, my understanding, including the former president. He, you know, made a point of going on the stage and talking about gun rights. You know, very important for him to do so. I noticed a little turning up the temperature in one of the local races in regards to guns. I don't know if you'd seen Fancy Brian, but U.S. Senator Ron Johnson has got a shiny new billboard in his hometown. Now, Ron is the recipient of just under $1.3 million, I believe, in NRA cash. Lifetime. You know, it's a lifetime achievement award. And that puts him like 14th all time in contributions received. Now, number one on the list shouldn't be a shocker, but kind of shocking. Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is number one in lifetime receipts, over $13 million over his career. But, you know, at a tenth of that, 1.3, that's nothing to sniff at. 1.3 million, that's a lot of cash, especially if you're in the reelected battle of your life. So Tom Nelson, who is a U.S. senatorial candidate and the Outagamie County executive that's sort of up near where Ron Johnson lives, well, he put a little billboard up in Ron Johnson's backyard in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And as I see the new billboard, effectively, it accuses Ron Johnson of being bought and paid for by the NRA. And it's posted near his house in his hometown. So if you're going to be a public figure, you know, you got to expect a little heat publicly, Ron. So I like that action. I like what Tom Nelson did. You know, I thought it was good jackassery, if you will. President Joe Biden, he does address his travels over the course of the weekend. Let's start with cut number two, if we could, Fancy Brian. President Biden, earlier today, I believe.
Folks who were victimized, their families, they spent 3 hours and 40 minutes with me. They waited all that time, and some came 2 hours early.
More from President Biden. The pain. Cut three.
They waited all that time, and some came 2 hours early. And the pain is palpable.
I suspect it is. More from President Joe Biden. Cut four, please.
I'm going to continue to push, and we'll see how this works.
Now, something else that's a little befuddling to me is Joe Biden, I believe, stated over the course of the weekend, he thinks he's got a couple of reasonable Republican partners over in the U.S. Senate. And obviously, it's pretty damn hard to get anything passed legislatively when you've got an obstructionist Republican Party. And maybe, you know, the heat's cooled down from Sandy Hook. It's been a number of years, but this newest shooting at an elementary school, and the fact that many of the cops stood by, didn't do squat for over an hour, well, that sort of defeats the whole good guy with the gun premise. And arming the school, I don't know if you know this, Fancy Brian, but you can currently, as a teacher, you can go and apply and go through a course and become an armed teacher in Texas schools. Been able to do so since Sandy Hook, since 2013, effectively. I think statewide they had like 300 teachers in 62 districts. You know, so there's a minuscule number relative to the student population in Texas, armed teachers. But Texas has a gun culture. And if you can't get teachers to go arm themselves in Texas, all these freaking Republicans that would seem to indicate, yeah, we just need to harden the schools, arm the teachers. Yeah, good luck with that. And I would point out, if the cops feel outgunned, if the cops are afraid, if the cops stood out in the hallway for 40 minutes, something like that, and there were 911 calls from victims inside the classroom, live victims saying, you know, there are lots of victims here. 911 calls came in. The cops knew that there was a shooter and there were live victims, people that had been wounded or had not been shot inside the classroom with the shooter. And the guy, the hero, the Border Patrol guy, they didn't wait for the tactical guy to show up. That was a father. He had kids in the school. He had a wife who was a teacher there. He showed up to take care of his own. This guy was off duty. He didn't wait for the door to be opened via keys. Apparently, they were standing outside the classroom for some period of time, awaiting keys. You know what? The guy didn't wait for the keys. My understanding is he kicked in the door and he shot the perp and he ended the stalemate. But that wasn't some, you know, tactical command guy that got called in from a local base. That was a father of a kid in the school who took matters into his own hand. So all these sort of, you know, good guys with a gun, and no doubt this courageous man had a lot more courage than any of the cops that day. And I don't know what sort of commands their you know, chief was giving them. But to not go in the classroom, to not kick your door in, to not make your way and try to save as many of these kids bleeding out as you could in real time. I mean, this doesn't really play out under any of the prior narratives I've heard Republicans put forth. You know, thoughts and prayers. That's mostly what we get from Republicans. You know, while I'm thinking about this, we got a guy who went and spoke at the NRA convention over the course of the weekend. Wayne LaPierre was the president of the NRA, and they allowed people to address the panel, and maybe we'll play that on the other side. But I would point out, Joe Biden thinks he's got some reasonable Republicans he can deal with, including Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. And I would point out Ron Johnson, the bought and paid for $1.3 million NRA recipient from the state of Wisconsin. I forget if he's one above or one behind U.S. Senator Mitch McConnell on the lifetime recipient list from the NRA. So no offense to President Biden, but if you think you're going to do business with the bought and paid for representative of the NRA, I mean, really, why don't you go negotiate with Ron Johnson? you got about as much chance, because of course all this is going to do, it's going to be some foot dragging, and then, well, you know, a compromise could not be reached amongst the caucus, and therefore we're going to have to table all change, all advancement. Nothing but thoughts and prayers. That's all we're going to get out of this. That's what I sadly suspect. Come back. I'll play a little sound. Might make you feel a little better, at least. More Devil's Advocates. The Tuesday Memorial Day Hangover Edition.
I've never really felt it was society's responsibility to take care of other people's children.
Thank God, the police.
Edition. It's still Tuesday, I promise you. Want to play some sound. Are we able to play some sound at this point? Okay, got some sound. And the speaker's name is Jason Selvig. And my understanding is he's part of a comedy duo. Doesn't sound like a comedian here, but see if you can taste and feel the irony, the sarcasm. It's sort of dripping from his address. And this is at the NRA convention. He comes to I believe it's microphone 1A. And while he's speaking, Wayne LaPierre, the president, the head of the NRA, is sitting on the DS. And it's a big room. There's thousands in the room. But I thought he left quite an impression. Jason Selvig, like to play it for you. Fancy Brian, drop the cut.
That's all I have to say. Thank you.
The chair recognizes the gentleman at microphone 1A.
Thank you. My name is Jason Selvig, and I'm from West Palm Beach, Florida. And I would like to say that I am sick and tired of the left-wing media, and frankly, people in this room today, spreading misinformation about Wayne LaPierre. Whenever there's a mass shooting, they all say that Wayne LaPierre isn't doing enough to stop these mass shootings, and even implying that Wayne LaPierre has played a part in making it easier for these shooters to get guns, to get weapons. You heard it after Las Vegas. You heard it after Pulse nightclub in Orlando. You heard it after Columbine. You heard it after Parkland. You heard it after Virginia Tech. You heard it after Sandy Hook. You heard it after El Paso. You heard it after Buffalo. You kept hearing that Wayne LaPierre isn't doing enough, and frankly, that's not true. The NRA, under Wayne LaPierre's leadership, has provided thoughts and prayers to the victims and their families. And maybe these mass shootings would stop happening if we all thought a little bit more and we prayed a little bit more. So I'm asking everyone in this room to think, to pray. Give your thoughts and your prayers and your thoughts and your prayers and your prayers and your thoughts. And if we give enough of these thoughts and these prayers, these mass shootings will stop. So I want to thank you, Wayne LaPierre, for all your thoughts and all your prayers. Thank you.
I suspect just a skosh of sarcasm there, Fancy Brian. Just a little. 844. And I know sarcasm. I've been, you know, sarcastic once or twice. 844-967-2789. A Fancy Brian calling in from Green Bay. Brian, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hi, Trudy. Love the show. I'm just calling because I'm a teacher, and I hear this stuff about, you know, arming teachers. And I didn't sign up for that. I have a gun. I've shot an AR-15. It's not mine. I've never owned one. But I don't understand how people think that teachers want to be the police. If we wanted to be police, we'd sign up to be police. You know, that's there's enough on our plate right now. The last thing we need to do is carry guns. And I've got colleagues that would be carrying them that I'd be scared to see carrying a gun. So that's all I wanted to
Brian,
say.
Brian, if the cops wouldn't go in this latest example, if the cops stood outside, if they didn't have the courage to face down a shooter who was highly armed with an AR-15, why would they think your homeroom teacher would pull out a handgun and go take on the assailant?
That's a great question. That'd be kind of a death wish if you ask me when they're carrying a AR-15 and wearing body armor and we got a handgun. It's not a fair fight.
No, it certainly doesn't seem like a fair fight. And obviously, Brian, you come to school in the morning and I suspect you probably dealt with a few budget cuts and, you know, a couple years of crazy sort of teaching environment through the pandemic, et cetera. Brian, what is the morale state in the schools right now? I mean, I asked my kid, and the one's getting ready to graduate, and the other one's just happy to be at the end of his school year. But, Brian, I got to think the kids have to be affected. The staff have to be feeling the pain from multiple fronts. How's your school doing, Brian?
No, I think it's, you know, just from a teacher standpoint, there's a lot of educators that are leaving. There's a lot of them that are kind of on their last leg. They're dumping stuff on us, and there's all these new requirements. And now with this, the latest shooting, I'm sure there's going to be a whole bunch more things that are coming at us. And there's less people going into education, too. That's the other thing that it's like 20% in college programs right now. So when you see people that are, you know, getting up there and ready to retire, and there's a lot more of us that are getting near that age, you're going to see shortages like never before. And then I think the right wingers will get what they want. They can privatize everything, and they're going to just call out the schools for being not safe. And you can't send your kid to a public school. And then, you know, one thing leads to another, they defund the public schools.
Brian, one of our, let's call them jaded callers, made allusion to that possibility. Can you believe that somewhere deep down, and I'm asking a question here, Brian, I'm trying not to characterize, mm-hmm. but your opinion, do you think Republicans want our schools to be vulnerable on some level, or at least are okay with this consequence because it moves forward their agenda to privatize the school and move everyone into voucher classes?
I don't think your average Republican is that way, but I think that some of them that are at the top that could stand to make a lot of money off of it don't care, and they'd be willing to do anything to make it easier to send all that voucher money to the private schools, which is already happening. And that's one of the things I think Tony Evers should address. He should be out there changing that rule, or at least bringing it to the attention that we're funding two public school systems with the voucher system. So no, I won't go that far, but I do think there are some up on the top of the Republican Party that they'd like to see. And if some people have to die in the meantime, they don't care.
Well said, Brian. Sad, but well said. My personal impression of Tony Evers, the Democratic governor of the state of Wisconsin, is he doesn't have an appetite to try and, let's just say, leverage the school choice issue. He could have, you know, tried to take it out of the budget. He could have threatened school choice, you know, to try and get some of his own agenda, because it's a pet project of these Republicans, you know, spending our taxpayer monies on a parallel school district, school system, uncapped. Evers, as near as I can tell, has zero appetite to try and hold, quote unquote, the kids hostage to this policy, which he would have to choose to change, and he will not.
Make sure you remember in your thoughts, and more importantly in your prayers.